from the crypt.
Hello, boys and ghouls. Welcome to a special episode of Dads from the Crypt. It's our Thanksgiving special. My name is Jason. And I'm joined by Jody.
Hello.
And Mondo.
Hello.
Hello, guys. And tonight we have some great guests for you. First, they were boyfriend and girlfriend who liked to get scared together. Then they were engaged and liked to get scared together. And now they're married and they still like to get scared together. From the Dead Meat YouTube channel and podcast, we have James and Chelsea.
Hello.
Hi.
Molly, hi.
You just can't hear.
Yeah, we have a dog on our laps.
Oh, sorry.
Nothing like podcasting with a dog on your lap.
Dog.
So welcome. I obviously, if you don't know about their YouTube channel or podcast, you should. So get on that. But James, you got some new endeavors happening. So tell us about Scream Dreams.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, Dead Meat podcast is first and foremost the number one podcast in my life and to my heart, since it is run by my lovely wife here, Chelsea, and it'll always be my number one. Thank you, dear. I love you.
Mm-hmm. This is like your mistress podcast.
Yeah, my side podcast is Scream Dreams, which just launched last week, and we've already recorded 10 episodes. Chelsea's the next episode that comes out as our guest, which is really cool, but that's just me co-hosting with Catherine Corcoran from Terrifier. And she is fantastic. She's producing it alongside Barbara Crampton, who also has a segment in every episode as the side Barb. And Barbara's awesome producing partner, Bob Portal, a wonderful British man who Chelsea and I really love because we're Anglophiles after our trip to London earlier this year. But it's just a great team over there. Really fun times. And we've had some great guests. I won't spoil any of them, but a lot of really good people that will be releasing weekly from here on out.
And what's the elevator pitch?
Oh yeah, I should probably say that. There are interviews with horror filmmakers and actors about the hook is nightmares and dreams and how they work those into their creative processes and just how they, you know, handle those things. And yeah, that's the...
Yeah, you talk about like recurring dreams a lot, which is a fun thing to learn about people. Like for example, my most recurring dream is my teeth fall out.
Ooh. Common one, yeah.
Which is I've a common one, apparently.
Mm-hmm. And my wife gets that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. And then
I just get Chelsea fun stuff like sleep paralysis.
Oh, yeah. See any little, like, fun little creature, like sleep paralysis creatures, or is it you just can't move?
I wouldn't call them fun. the stuff I've seen is not okay.
Sure.
Oh, I've seen the old hag. I've had conversations with somebody in a language I didn't understand. So,
oh my god!
Wow. Right?
How many gummies did you take that night,
dude? I wish. Well, I don't know if I told you guys, but I hadn't had a sleep paralysis episode in probably 10 years until I stayed at the Hotel Monte Vista in Flagstaff, which I found out afterwards is a notoriously haunted hotel.
Ooh,
that's the last time I actually had sleep paralysis and the first time I had in like 10 years.
Wow.
So, fun stuff. All right. Fun stuff.
And when does that podcast release?
That is every Wednesday. Okay. I think around like 7 in the morning Pacific time. Because Dead Meat Podcast is every other Wednesday.
At 6 a.m.
Pacific. At 6 a.m. Pacific time. So, yeah, sometimes you get a double dose of me.
Nice. All right. And then, Chelsea, you had a big voiceover premiere this week. Let's tell us about that.
Yeah. I voice a character that was just added to Fire Emblem Heroes, which if you like Fire Emblem or kind of like JRPG type stuff, you might know Fire Emblem Heroes. It's the Nintendo's mobile version of that game series. And so I voice Isadora, who was added. She's from Fire Emblem 7, so she's like an older character that they brought into this game. So because she was an older game, I think Game Boy Advance, she wouldn't have had a voice. So they needed a voice for her, and they cast me, and it was the coolest thing ever. I'm still like, I keep playing it just to listen to my little voice lines in it. It's so much fun.
That's great. And then while we're talking, you know, your projects and stuff, it's been, I was looking at, it's just been a year since you released the concept trailer for Pregame.
That was last year.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering
slowed that process down, but we're setting meetings again and trying to get a move on the script that our buddy Nick wrote. And
we just did some script doctoring to it too.
A little bit, yeah. I should say the script that our buddy Nick and Max wrote, because they are co-writers on it now. Yeah. Max has really brought a lot to the show, but our horror comedy about a football rivalry inspired by the University of Michigan and Ohio State rivalry, since we come from Michigan.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that game is this Saturday. Oh yeah.
I know. And then Michigan
is gonna be intense.
Yeah.
What are you going to say, Jason?
I was going to say Michigan's projected to go to the Rose Bowl this year. So that
yes, they are, which is very exciting. I thought you were going to make a snide comment about the scandal.
Man, we just went to school there.
No, I went to Oregon, so that's one projection. So I'll be I'll talk to Mac.
Are you a duck? I was going to say a duck. Okay.
A duck. Yeah.
Quack, quack.
So, yeah, that could be interesting. Okay, but let's get into it. Tonight we're talking about Eli Ross Thanksgiving, which just came out last week. Jody, why don't you hit us with you can do some spoilers, but more of a brief plot synopsis.
Well, I figured there might be a little bit of spoiling here, but really we'll get into spoilers when we get into discussion, because I don't think we can really talk about this movie without getting into some spoilers, because like the best scenes are going to be spoiling something. But this is one of those movies, you know, I didn't watch it like taking notes. I just took it in. I just was in the theater listening to a baby cry behind me and enjoying the movie despite that. But anyway, plot synopsis. We open in the town of Plymouth, where they're getting ready to have a big Black Friday sale at, I don't remember the name of the store.
Oh, it's like it a
Rite Mart.
Rite Mart. Yeah, it's a Walmart, Best Buy, it's something like that, analog. But they're having this big Black Friday sale, and it is by far the craziest Black Friday crowd I have ever seen, even in other movies, because they are all lined up outside, pressing up against the gates. There's security there. People are screaming. Some of the most annoying characters I have ever seen are right up front with the strongest bad Boston accents I have ever heard. And it's just a movie that sets you up going, I'm ready for some violence in this movie. This is going to be fun. Like, someone's going to get killed, and some people I hope get killed, because I don't want to see them on screen too much. Not that they're bad actors. I just don't like the characters, because they're awful.
It's intentional, I think.
It's intentional. Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. Meanwhile, there's a family Thanksgiving get-together on Thanksgiving Day, and it is the owner of the store and his family and their manager. The manager has to go in because of all this. The daughter gets together with her cast of somewhat annoying friends. Some are okay. Some are definitely slasher fodder. And they all go to the store and sneak in through the employee entrance. They make a big deal, or one of the guys makes a big deal about how he has cut the line and he's already there. And so the people outside just completely lose it. They bash through the gates. They bash through the door. They crush a guy. Multiple people are injured. The wife of the store manager gets her hair ripped out, like her scalp ripped off.
Gina Gershon. Oh, that's
Gina Gershon.
That's
hard
to watch.
People die. It's a terrible riot. And then we go 1 year later, where somebody who was affected by this riot starts picking off those who were involved one by one in creative Thanksgiving-themed ways. And that's my favorite part of this whole thing, is how Thanksgiving-themed it is. It's like My Bloody Valentine, in that everything is Thanksgiving related, just like everything in that town of Valentine's Bluff is Valentine's Day related. I love a slasher with a gimmick, and boy, we go hard with it.
All right.
So that's where I'll stop for now. Yeah, we'll get into the rest later.
All right, James and Chelsea, start us off. What did you guys think?
I thought that it was a quintessential slasher. I mean, you know, slashers go in and out. I'm not sure if they're not the biggest subgenre right now.
But I feel like I think there's definitely a demand for it, especially after the new Scream movies. I think people really
and the new Halloween movies.
Yeah, those were huge. New Halloween movies and stuff like Happy Death Day. And I think there is kind of a craving for like fun slashers now.
Yeah, and I think that this was just a wonderful updated like Scream. I mean, Scream. It's basically Scream, just gorier. It's more violent and gorier. It's got the holiday hook to it.
I do love a whodunit.
Yeah, exactly. It's a whodunit like, with teens.
I think that's a big because I'm not the biggest slasher fan.
Yeah.
I think slashers, when I do really love them, often do have kind of a whodunit because that keeps me engaged the whole time. Whereas sometimes it'll, you know, if you don't have that kind of waiting for you at the end, it can start to feel a little repetitive. Although I guess if the kills are really creative, then that's another thing.
Yeah, the kills have got to be good, and this one definitely has those. I mean, there were even just like offhand kills almost like in the parade the guy driving the float. That one was like holy shit.
It's just
great looking gore. Just,
like we were saying about the Thanksgiving theme of it all, I agree 1000%, because when you think about it, there's no reason for the killer to be this committed to the bit, but it makes it so funny that they are. And I love it. It keeps it so interesting and novel. And I really like that about it. And it doesn't feel like it's the movie doesn't think it's above it either.
Sure.
Right. Like, I think it takes it very seriously that this person is a Thanksgiving themed killer. And it leans into it.
Like, I felt, I was like questioning myself because I was laughing so hard when he's taking the stepmom. And he's like salting her and rubbing her with oil and putting parsley
between her toes.
I was cracking up in the theater. I was like, are people going to look at me weird?
But no, and I mean, you're waiting for the timer to the button to pop. And
right.
It's great. Yeah.
And I love, that's one of my favorite kills. Those whenever they have like someone's in the car and something comes from behind them all of a sudden. That's always a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I think Final Destination is it the second one when the airbag goes off? And,
That's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. The Descent has one kind of like that. That's one of my favorite kind of jump kills. Mm-hmm. I love the whodunit aspect, and I like that they took the time to really like think about it, because oftentimes when I'm watching a movie that has a whodunit, I kind of play process of elimination in my head to try to figure out who it is. And they did a good job of keeping two specific red herring characters out of a lot of the third act. So you're like, it could be either one of those guys, because we haven't seen them in a while. And they thought it through because they know the audience is going to be thinking it through.
There's so many characters with motive.
A lot of characters, period. A lot of them have motive. A lot of them, like you said, disappear for long enough stretches of time where they could be the killers. And then a lot of them survive. And I think Roth said something about a sequel, which would be fine by me, because some of the characters who survived, McCarty, the gun dealer, I love that favorite guy.
Yeah,
yes.
He was great. I don't know why Addison Rae's character survived. Yeah, I have a feeling it's just because she's Addison Rae. Because it's like her and her boyfriend are like the friend characters, and he gets killed at the dinner, and then she gets to survive. And I don't know why, other than to have her in a sequel.
Like, was it like a contractual thing that she didn't want to die? But like,
if you're
a TikTok star, you get to live.
Yeah. I didn't even know that was her until the credits, because I don't do TikTok and I don't really know her, but I knew that she had been in it and then forgot when I was watching, and then the credits rolled and I was like, oh, was that that character who kind of disappeared halfway through the movie?
Mm-hmm. Mondo, go.
Yeah, I was a real big fan of this. I'm a sucker for a good slasher, and like everything that's been said before, especially like the leaning into the Thanksgiving theme made it super fun. I'm going to spoil one little part here, and it's not a a major spoiler. It's not something that's going to like ruin the movie for anybody. But the scene where he kills the man, and then as he's leaving, the cat meows at him.
Yeah.
And is sitting by a Super Bowl. Might be one of my favorite scenes in cinema history.
Oh, yeah.
He brutally beheads this man and then goes back to feed his cat.
We saw this movie with a couple friend of ours who brought their child who she loves horror movies. Her parents are like horror filmmakers, so she's around horror stuff and she knows it's all fake. Yeah. So during that scene with the cat, she just very loudly goes, "Well, that was nice." It was so cute. I agree. Yes, it was very nice.
At first, he looks at the cat, and I was like, "Oh no, oh
yeah,
no!"
Please, you think it's gonna be an animal kill.
I'm just, I think the cats are often introduced in movies as like a joke kind of. I think of like Christmas Vacation or something where it's like, oh no, poor cat. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad they didn't go that direction in this. I don't know why I said Christmas Vacation like that's a horror movie. That's the first thing I thought of.
Like,
isn't there a scene in Hostel 2 where the character's been beheaded and then this girlfriend finds him and the cat's like licking?
The cat's like licking at his neck stump.
Yeah. Eli Roth and cats.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I actually read something from him just the other day that said that the reason why the cat survived and that whole scene of petting, he said when he sees an animal in a movie, he gets so distracted by it because he's worried that animal's going to get hurt. So he just did something nice with the animal instead.
That's awesome. And I'll say the intro scene they did with the Black Friday chaos as a former retail worker, man, like I'm not going to lie. Like my anxiety was through the roof in that freaking scene. And how great was the guy who got his throat slit and still was like running over to grab his waffle iron. And then someone takes it out of his cold dead hands.
I have a question though. Do you guys think that depiction of Black Friday is like
dated?
I couldn't help but think like it was like 8 to 10 years too old now, because I feel like most shopping now is online. Like in like 2010, I feel like I would be more like waiting in lines for Black Friday, but I don't know if there's this kind of rambunctious, because Krampus had a similar Black Friday chaotic opening, but that came out back in like 2015 maybe, and that felt more of the time. This didn't, which is, it's the most minorest knock. I don't care. It's a great setup. And it's also like actually kind of disturbing, the scene and the people who get killed, like the poor security guard who gets trampled.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
Gina
that's
Gershon.
Happened in real life.
It has. Yeah, for sure. And, and like you were saying, Jody, it's introducing all these characters in that scene who are obnoxious and you're like, oh, I wouldn't mind seeing them killed. And then they don't die. It's like these relatively innocent people who get murdered in heinous ways. And you're just like, oh God, I feel uncomfortable here. And then that works as an inciting incident. But I couldn't help but think, oh man, I don't think the Black Fridays are like this anymore. But then again, I never leave my house, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think I'm the same way. Online now.
Yeah,
it might be a little bit, but yeah, it still worked. But like Mondo was saying, my first job out of college, this was 2003, was working at Sears. And they didn't have Black Friday the night of Thanksgiving, but the morning of was like the craziness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I worked in home electronics, and it was at a Sears. I was on the bottom floor, and I could hear like the rumble of
feet. Oh my God.
When they opened the doors, I was just sitting there like, oh my God.
Oh man.
My first year in retail, when I was 16, I was working for Kmart in a not good area of town here in Las Vegas. I lived in a group in a bad area, and we were open on Thanksgiving that year. We decided we're gonna beat everyone open on Thanksgiving. There was literally, it was like the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. We have pallets of these big stereo boombox systems we were selling, granted, because it's 1999. Pallets of them sitting everywhere, and people are fist fighting over them. And it's like, we have enough for like one for every one of you, plus all your friends. Why? Yeah. I watched two people literally just beat the shit out of each other as I'm trying to hand them. Like, look, there's more. Let's take it.
Oh my God.
Never again, like blackjack.
All right, Jody.
Yeah, I love this. I'm a big slasher person. Oh, hang on. Did my echo start echoing?
I heard a little echo.
For a second, but it's back.
Yeah, okay. Okay, just want to make sure. Anyway, I love this. I love slashers in general. And I like that this was just a straightforward slasher. Like, there was no, like, you know, there wasn't any kind of meta aspect to it. Like, they weren't, you know, trying to comment on the movie or like take a new spin on slashers. You know, I love the Happy Death Day. I love the what's the time travel one that just came out? Totally Killer.
Totally,
you know,
Killer.
Those are fun movies. Yeah. But yeah. I like that this was not anything new. It was just a really well done, good version of the slashers that, you know, I grew up with and that I love. Yeah. And it was, the gore was amazing. We had some incredible kills, mostly practical effects, I think, too. And it was just great. I had a great time with it. It might be one of my favorite movies of the year. And I will definitely be watching this one pretty much every November from here on out. I don't see any reason why I wouldn't keep watching this over and over.
Yeah, it's incredibly gory. Like,
yeah,
it's so gross.
Yeah, and not in like the tortury way that Hostel was.
No,
it's
a much like, more fun goal. Very tongue in cheek, kind of.
Yeah, like
silly.
We were talking to some friends, and this is like mature Eli Roth, if that's like a thing. Like, like there was only like one like really douchey character, and he like he wasn't in the whole movie.
Wait, who are you thinking of?
The jock guy,
Evan with the long hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually ended up liking him a lot more than I thought I would. And maybe it was the actor who sold it for me. But like, yeah, in that first scene, I'm like, oh, okay, we got a real douchebag here. And then later on, I was like, you know what? I kind of like this guy, actually. He's all right. I kind of like what the actor's doing.
Right. So like, it was like real well-calibrated Eli Roth for what he's done.
Well-calibrated. Nice.
Yeah, I'm often like watching his movies. He's very hit or miss. Mm-hmm. For me, and I guess like often watching his movies, I feel weird about like how the women are dealt with in them, especially kind of knowing like his reputation, at least like especially younger Eli Roth and what being on a set with him was like. We don't have to go too much into that because that's getting into like just Eli Roth in general. But this, I agree. It did not feel like that. And I was thankful.
I agree.
Didn't get those kind of weird vibes from this.
In fact, I was surprised by the lack of nudity. There's just a little bum flash from the cheerleader.
Yeah. Especially because I was looking for the trampoline scene is the big one from the trailer.
That was totally like cheesecake and silly, and that feels very like jokey and not like
It was less explicit than the trailer, though, because the trailer was topless scene, so they actually toned it down and added more stabbing.
Works better, especially because there's something weird, even though you know the actress or actors are over the age of 18. If they're in high school, like, there's no need for any kind of
That's always like the weird one. Like, oh wait, I mean, I know the actor's adult, but we are watching like a teenage character.
Always makes it mean.
Stripping down for a coach of some sort, or like someone who we know is out of
high school. Yeah, you gotta have that sleaze bag in there, like that kind of character. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I do like the touch in this one, how he leaves to go with her, and then it shows just how everyone knows what's going on. They're all like, oh, that fucking guy.
I also love that, what's his name? The gun dealer. He becomes kind of a hero, because at first you think he's a douchebag, because he's an entrepreneur because he's throwing a party for kids to get them drunk. But in a singular moment in this movie, he became my hero. When the kids go, who's Black Sabbath? And he's like, get the fuck out of my property, because that's
what I would do. That whole scene made me just think of you like smiling.
Yeah, 100%.
I feel like I know that guy. And like, I feel like that is a person that I know from like my own kind of teenage young 20s years back in Michigan, you know, like that exact kind of guy who should be totally scuzzy but actually just has a heart of gold, you know. You would trust them with your fucking life.
Oh my god, he had the best movie posters too. Like, he had like Kroll and I forgot what the other one was. I was looking at that, I was like oh, okay, this guy's down. And then he has that float where he's playing like heavy metal on it.
Yeah, that was super cool. And I love he's a catalyst, too, when he gives her that ring at the end. I was like, why did he give her this ring? And then the way it plays out, I thought was amazing.
Chekhov's ring. So what I really liked about this movie is, like, we've all probably seen Grindhouse and saw those trailers, and thought, oh, those trailers are so cool. But really, if you stretched out just that trailer, this would not be that watchable of a movie. And what they did, what was really smart, and I listened to his interview with Mick Garris, and basically he said, like, yeah, we can't make that trailer specifically into a movie, but let's pretend that that trailer belonged to a real movie that has been lost to time, and that was so offensive that they just burned all the copies. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a modern remake of that movie but not really having seen it, or like based on like third hand knowledge. So it's interesting that this is more, this feels very much like a 2010s remake, like the My Bloody Valentine, the second Black Christmas, those kind of movies, where it's a little on the glossy side, a little bit where everyone's probably a little too pretty for, you know, a real town, but done really well and just really well thought out. And so many homages again to the My Bloody Valentine, a little bit of Halloween, like that whole dinner scene made me think of Texas Chainsaw. And then, you know, a bit of the Scream template, but all kind of blended together and calibrated really, really well.
Yeah, no, I definitely got the like 2000s remake vibe from this, you know, where it was slick, it was well produced, it was a lot of pretty people, and they were gory. Like they had some nasty creative stuff going on in those. Like I remember in My Bloody Valentine, there was like this cookie that was made of skin, like all this crazy stuff going on. And it was the exact same kind of thing. Like I especially when they're carving the turkey later on at that dinner scene, and like this, it felt like they were up in the nastiness. That dinner scene is going to be stuck in my head for a long time.
Kind of reminded me of was it Happy Birthday to You, where she there's like
Happy Birthday to Me.
Happy Birthday to Me. I'm sorry, where it's the whole like weird dinner and that. I thought of that too.
I like too the dad's kind of redemption arc. How the store owner, how you kind of see him like he's just this skeezy guy, but then he's like actually listens to his child, like holy shit, and decides you're right, I should cancel his Black Friday sale. Like he finally like, gets some sense into him. So it was, I kind of liked his redemption.
Well, you're frozen, but I'll just,
and he's I forgot the actor's name, but he is just the most devious looking human being. Rick, like, look at that guy. Yeah, that guy's up to something.
That's another character where I think the actor makes him so much more likable than he should be, because it's Rick Hoffman, who had that very memorable scene in Hostel. I didn't watch Suits, but I know that a lot of people know him from that. And here he's just rocking this big old dad stash. And I love everything he's doing in this movie.
No, did you guys stay for the after credit scene?
There was an after credits?
What?
Yeah, so there's a scene at the very end of the credits where it's the same scene with the father and the daughter, where they give her a hug and then she walks away. It's the exact same scene, except like he's just standing there and like no one's called cut yet, so he's just standing there uncomfortably, and then he gives a finger to the camera.
Oh, okay.
So it's like nothing. But what I was really hoping for just a moment is that like he would like pull up his sleeve and you'd see the Elite Hunting tattoo.
Oh yeah,
right.
Like if that would be like a shared universe kind of thing, that would just blow my mind. Because he is such a memorable bit in that first Hostel movie. But there's lots of cool like things I think are just so well thought out that you wouldn't think of. Like the whole like when the mask gets burnt on the oven and then it gives that cool burnt mask look. Like most other movies, that he just wear like a messed up mask because he's a fringe killer. But no, they actually thought of like how would this get distressed like that and look cool.
That was definitely an homage to Halloween Kills.
I thought that he was I thought he was gonna just wear that the rest of the movie and that would be the signature look, but no, he just has a stack of
He just replaces it.
Which they do mention earlier, like, oh, we give these out to everyone.
Which is smart because he wants to blend in, so that the burnt mask would make him stand out.
That's true.
But then there was that cool scene in the parade where you see that clown, you're like, that clown doesn't really look like it fits there, but you're not but you're not looking for, you're looking for the pilgrim guy. So you're not like thinking about it too much. And then out of nowhere, he just, you know, swings that, you know, the axe is coming.
Because they don't really focus on the clown. The clown just kind of, you see him just kind of walk through the scene and you're thinking, like, who would dress up as a creepy clown for a Thanksgiving Day parade? And then,
I love how just 4D chess that is too on the part of the killer. Like, okay, I'll make it so that everyone's going to be looking for John Carver, but I also have this clown outfit that then once everyone is focused on this, I will deploy the clown mask. Like it's so funny how elaborate it all is when you think about it for 2 seconds.
But you're like, again, you're waiting for those trailer moments. So you know that when the parade's coming, you know that he's going to pop out and, you know, knock that off. The trick, but you're like, how's he going to do that? They've got the security. So it was a great subversion of our expectation on that.
Yeah.
Can we drop into spoiler territory here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you guys think of the ending? Because I thought the twist was perfect and that it actually made all the sense in the world. And then when, you got those movies, they just give you a twist for the sake of giving you a twist. No, it's logical and it all made sense. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I loved the pregnancy angle because that was kind of just an added thing they didn't need to do.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, though, I absolutely loved the twist at the end, thought it was perfect. And just how she puts it together by seeing the stickers on his shoes that she had on her. I was like, oh. Brilliant.
It was one of those that it fits perfectly, but I didn't see it coming at the same time up until right before it happened. Like when she found him laying on the ground with blood on his head, I started to get suspicious. I'm like, okay, something's up here. This is not why would he be there? But the blood was still is enough. On his
face the exact same way the mask is burnt when he leaves it on.
So
it's a little visual clue.
Okay.
I feel like they did just enough though to kind of still keep that suspense because Bobby was still kind of in the wind at that point. We didn't know what was going to happen with him. And it could have been the other boyfriend too, right?
Who also survived.
Ivy League. Douchebag.
He just kind of pops in and out, though. He just kind of pops in and out, which is why it's a great red herring because you just see him every now and again. You're like, this fucking dude. It turns out he's not up to anything. He just wants this girl really bad. He's not a nice guy. Yeah. But
his biggest crime is he's probably rude to service workers.
Yeah. there was nothing specific that made me not like that character, but he just came off as a douchebag, and I don't even know why, but he definitely came off that way.
Oh yeah, he pays for tennis lessons. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Well, he's going to Starbucks and talking to the manager.
Well, I thought what was funny though is that actor is in this Disney series called Zombies, where there's like three of these movies.
Oh yeah,
it's like High School Musical meets with zombies, werewolves, and aliens. And my daughter loves these movies, so I've watched them a million times, and I kind of enjoy them on some level. And he plays like a really nice guy in those. It was really funny to me.
And speaking about odd characters too, the nerdy guy that's selling tickets for the rave. When that guy stands up and gets his book report and the teacher's like, yeah, that was great. When I wrote it on my blog, I was yes.
Oh, dude.
We got to talk about probably our favorite character. I feel like that's at least definitely my favorite. The other kid giving the book report and then lifting up his shirt to wipe his tears and showing his abs.
Washboard abs.
My favorite one-off. Joke character in that one.
I think his name
movie.
Was Chad too, which just made me.
I love him.
When I see people do that in real life, I'm like, yeah, you do that. Like, you worked hard for those fucking things. Like, I wouldn't even wear a shirt. Like, I'd wear a fishnet shirt at all times. Like, it'd be.
Oh, man.
Staple of Eli Roth movies, having really just memorable one off characters like Pancake Kid from Cabin Fever. He does a really good job with that.
Mm hmm. The only thing that I think I didn't find satisfying about, I guess it's not even just the twist, but just kind of like the way that we get there, is it kind of relies on the initial makeup of the people at this Thanksgiving dinner, which I found a very weird collection of people. Like it's the manager of the store and his wife I was so curious, like what their relationship, like him and the right family, like, are they that close? Were they related?
What, Dempsey?
No. The guy at the whose beginning? Wife is Gina Gershon.
Oh, when they're
and he gets called into work, and he's at the Wright family house, and he's like,
there are two separate dinners in the beginning.
Oh, are there?
Yeah, because he gets a call. Yeah, Dempsey is at the owner. Yeah, Rick Hoffman's house.
Yeah,
but the manager. This character who we haven't even mentioned once, Mitch, he is at his own house when he gets the call that he has to go in and work there.
Real fast, doesn't the sheriff, the sheriff's at his house, though, because the sheriff wanted to see Gina Gershon.
Right. Yeah, he's there to see Gina.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Okay, you're right. I'm sorry. Dempsey is at the manager's house.
I will say, though, that did also confuse me. I was thinking the exact same thing until I actually had to read afterwards. It wasn't just you, because I think it's how they go between the two houses, and it's still a Thanksgiving setting when Thanksgiving shot. That was kind of, it's definitely muddled. It was muddled for me.
Okay, I'm glad I wasn't the only one.
I don't think I realized that until just now.
Yeah, it took me a second while I was watching, and I was like, wait a minute, there's a lot of people here. Oh, we're watching two different dinners.
Okay, that explains.
One is, yeah, because one is.
I was like, you can just let him not go into work. I'm so confused.
Yeah, because one of them is the final girl and her dad who owns the store, and they're in a very nice, like, elaborate, rich house. The other is the manager of that store who gets called in. Patrick Dempsey's visiting him because he's sleeping with his wife, we find out later. And it's not as nice and like upper class of a house.
Weird that, that I'm not the only one that confused.
The editing's weird. The editing's a little,
It could also just be a general, like not even just set decoration thing, because their houses are obviously very different, but it could just be a color thing where if you have both houses that are both decorated for Thanksgiving and maybe we've got a similar color scheme, that's maybe you realize too late, like, oh, that's a bit visually
confusing. I think they could have established it a little better from the outright.
Okay.
I don't know if we see,
don't
like,
I feel foolish.
I don't know if we see exterior shots of their houses. We might just start from the inside.
We get that POV where we think it's like a killer, like someone fucking up, and it turns out it's Patrick Dempsey. So we get that one, but we don't see the outside of the nicer house until all the final girl leaves.
Oh, so maybe they could have done a little bit better just establishing those two separate locations. Because, it's confusing. Because also, you're watching this movie, and if you don't know that we're with two different families, you're just like, oh, we're at the Thanksgiving dinner. You know,
that's my fault,
Mm-hmm.
Now, what did you guys think of the final girl?
She was fine.
She's fine.
Yeah, she's okay.
Out of that whole group, she was probably the most normal one.
Yeah.
As in, like, a lot of times everybody else was doing, like, she felt like the person that, like, when she let everybody into the store, it felt like she was doing that because she just wanted to be one of the cool kids, not because she really wanted to cause mischief or anything like that. And, you know, I thought she was probably the most noble of the characters.
Yeah. I think probably of the characters. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say our theater did laugh a couple times because this movie does seem like it's just a scene after scene of this poor girl being traumatized, and it's kind of a slow zoom of her sitting with the fire department with like the like foil blanket around her. It happens so often that it's a little funny, and I don't know if it's on purpose.
I like her at the end when she's figuring stuff out and taking an active role in things.
She comes into it, but for a while, I thought she was just kind of okay.
Yeah, I think through a lot of it, she's probably the least interesting of all the characters. Like, everyone else has got these big, crazy personalities, and she's just kind of there.
Like, scuba.
So, yeah, I mean, that sometimes happens with the protagonist. It's like, okay, your job is to go through and have this stuff happen to you. And it's like, oh, the friends get to be loud and boisterous, or be, like, friend with Russian dad? I don't know.
Oh, yes.
I love Russian dad.
I love that Julia. Guy.
That's my favorite part. He's like, we're going to Florida. That's it. Like, yes. Hey, good call.
I'm not going to lie. He was the smartest guy. He goes, we're going to fuck out of this town. Like, there's some shit going on. Let's get out of here.
Pack all his track suits and get down.
God, I was just about to say, I was like, he's got all his track suits to pack up.
And I love that the killer kind of doesn't kill anyone that didn't have anything to do with Black Friday. Like, he tranquilizes them.
He tranks him, because you know, naturally, as I'm watching this, I'm like trying to do a little bit of a kill count in my head, and like he shoots those guys, and there's just like a little pew, and I was like, wait a minute, that didn't sound right. And so, yeah, and then later, for sure, it was verified that they were just getting a little night juice.
Well, so wait, he didn't kill the father and that guard, or
I don't think so. Okay.
I thought it was a silencer at first, I guess.
Nope, just
tranquilizing. That's what I thought, too, is that it was a silencer. And
I thought that until he took out the main people and took them back to the house, because he did the same thing to them. He tranked them in the car.
Okay.
Yeah, I was confused for a long time during, like, the middle stretch of this movie. What the hell happened to, like, Addison Rae and the other guy? Evan, I was like, are they... Mm-hmm. dead?
Like, someone pops around the corner and like drugs them, and I had just assumed, like,
if you don't see them, they're not dead.
And then with Yulia, I think the killer shows her on the phone that they're like alive and tied up somewhere. But yeah, it was definitely a writing out of those characters for whatever reason, Ms. Ray.
So for me too, the most satisfying kill was that obnoxious piece of shit woman that worked at the diner.
Yes.
The first one cut in half in the dumpster.
One of my favorite scenes is when she's on her phone trying to call the police, and there's blood on her hands, so she can't use her phone. And then it won't recognize her face.
He does the dunk her head in water and then freeze her to the freezer door, which is a great moment.
Awesome. And then that had to have been an homage to Jason 10.
Yeah.
I thought so too with the head dunking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought that scene again in the school where she's by herself and her friends, she's waiting for her friends and they get drinked or whatever. Like I remember being in high school whenever you're at school alone, like after class or whatever.
Yeah.
And like, you're in a place where there used to be a ton of people. Now there's no one. It's so great. Yeah. It does that
it's
really
well. It's
the weirdest
feeling. Yeah, for sure. And also the school's beauty salon.
That's right. Yeah. What is the school's budget?
Lots
dude?
Of like vocational classes.
I mean, good for them.
That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. Like that's, I
would love to see their workshop.
That's unusual.
I know.
I guess maybe, you know, every school's different. Like schools, we're both from Metro Detroit, and my school had an auto shop.
Yeah, me too, for sure.
So, because that's like a common vocation there. But
that makes sense.
A beauty salon. I mean, it's a cool visual kind of gag with all
their
things.
Head like hiding among the mannequins.
Yeah, but yeah, they set it up as a good set piece later, which I thought was cool.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, she goes for the scissors, doesn't get them, just uses the hairspray instead to blind them. That's great.
Yeah.
So, like, spraying someone who's wearing a mask is a little okay.
eye holes. Like, you got to be able to see everything. So,
yeah, a lot of good set pieces in here. I think my favorite is with the stepmom. Her whole chase sequence is just fantastic. You really start to root for her because she really puts up a fight against this guy and, you know, ends up still thrown in the oven in the end. But I love it. Like, when he's standing in the doorway, she's hiding around the corner, and then pitchfork comes through the wall right next to her. Just lots of good moments like that.
Right. Also, the security guard, the one with the cat, he kept making me think of Chris Farley. Like a real big Chris
I can see that.
Definitely. And you want to know what? Dude, that guy's getting paid like $11 an hour. I don't mind him running away from a mob. He shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Right. Like, they're acting like he's like a soldier who left his post and went AWOL.
Yeah.
Right. For that.
He was an unarmed person with a yellow vest on, like, or yellow shirt on.
Yeah. You know, what's he going to do?
And look what happened to his fucking coworker. He made the right choice, man.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He definitely is the person who gets killed who like least deserves it, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Except for that guy driving the float.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Was he involved at all, or is that just unfortunate?
I think that was just an accident.
Yeah.
Well, that day he had the little girl sitting beside him, and we're like, Grandpa.
Oh my God, they're getting sprayed with blood, dude. And they like can't get out the door. Oh man.
It's
such a dark humor
it's
moment.
It's so funny. Yeah.
And then again, Patrick Dempsey, supposedly that's his real accent.
No, it's not.
No, that's, again, according to Eli Roth on the Mick Garris podcast, that's Patrick Dempsey's, at least.
You can't lie to Mick Garris. You'll burst into flames. So
that's true. He's a wizard. He knows if you are.
I can't believe his podcast is ending.
I know.
It's so sad. But, you know.
But yeah, Patrick Dempsey is sexiest man of the year and possibly best killer of the year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Possibly what?
Possibly the best killer of the year. I mean, it's cool that he took a role on like this.
Yeah.
He like was so down.
And it left him open with, you know, he could return.
Mm-hmm.
The Thanksgiving killer could come back. It's not a definitive kill.
Prayers up for Scream 7.
Oh, yeah. Mark over. And Cade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He is Nev Campbell's, he is Sydney Prescott's husband.
They are married,
and have children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love the exploding turkey. That was a great way to top that off.
Oh, and him at the end carving a piece out of the woman, that was, and then the dad starts vomiting, that was,
gross.
It was nasty.
I mean, my brain always says.
They all had their mouths gagged, and I was like, someone's going to throw up, and there's going to be, like, the puke spewing out the sides of those gags, for sure.
And I'm starting thinking, like, man, everyone's going to need some therapy after this, and they're all going to need a therapist.
Oh, yeah, when they unveiled the turkey, it's just the stepmom in turkey pose, all crispy and golden.
Yeah, it did make me in that moment think, like, yeah, it's really fucked up the way we present a turkey on Thanksgiving. You know,
splayed.
Just the little things on the feet. I don't even know what those are.
No one actually knows anymore. Do they?
What are those? What do you call them?
Booties.
Booties.
Works for me. It's probably been shown a million times on the internet, but I just saw this. It's a meme with Snoopy and Woodstock, and they have a turkey. And it says, Woodstock, what the fuck? I'm just about to just dive into this fucking turkey.
All right, well, let's wind this down a little bit. Obviously, you're going to kill count this, but we won't hold it to it. But does everyone want to give their favorite kill from the movie?
Ooh. You know, like, I love the dumpster kill. That was great. Although I think that was a little bit more CG maybe than the other practical kills. So I would have to knock it down for that. I absolutely love, like, I want to say the head in the float, the poles through the back of the head. But all the lead up and just like the on brand thing with the stepmom, I think that it has to take it. Like, it just has to, because it is the Thanksgiving kill. He roasts her like a turkey. Like, how could it not be that?
Yeah, that's my pick too.
So my pick again was Yulia, because he took the corn cobs, shoved them in her ears, that's and then right. throws her onto a saw blade. That's just
That was Scuba's reaction to that of just like, what do I do? Like, that was like some serious shock and trauma.
I love that the little corn cob guys had googly eyes on them.
Yeah.
Jordy, what was your favorite kill?
Yeah, I was going to say Yulia, just because it came out of nowhere. Because you know, the corncob and all that stuff. But then she's wandering around. She can't hear anything. And then all of a sudden, there's this spinning blade. And she falls on it. And it just starts shooting pieces everywhere. It was a great one.
And it makes sense that she's stumbling around. Because like sticking those in your ears would mess with your equilibrium.
Yeah.
All right, Mondo.
I'm with the Yulia kill on this one too, because as a guy that I've gotten vertigo and stuff from having ear issues, and I could just like feel that pain. So like the two things that get me in movies are eye stuff and ear stuff.
Yeah.
And two holes in your body that nothing should ever go in.
Well, then she's doing the contacts before, and I hate eye stuff. So that was
what a fake out. Before.
I hate eye stuff. I got LASIK, so I don't know if it really makes sense, but.
But I appreciate, though, that there's not really, like, a bad kill in this. Like, every one of them is interesting in some way. Even, like, the security guard before the head gets cut off, he gets stabbed in the stomach, but it's with a carving knife, the little electric, like, you know, it's all on theme.
And then, lest we forget,
it's a trope. I do love him walking around his apartment, like, just talking shit to the killer. He's like, oh, God, I'm in trouble.
Yes. He's so gross, yeah.
It gets so many likes, though.
I know.
Yeah, the social media aspect of it, I didn't even think of that. That was kind of interesting. That was like, you know, because that's what would happen. If you live stream murder, people will watch it and like it because they're idiots. But
yeah.
Yeah. And it makes it feel like maybe the Addison Rae casting was a little bit meta in that aspect, but.
Sure.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they're all doing, when we first meet all the characters, they're in the car, they're talking about, like, TikTok and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them says breaking the internet, and I'm like, oh, an older person wrote this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. I don't think kids saying
don't
that.
Talk like that anymore.
That scene in the car made me feel so old. I'm like, I understand. I need subtitles on this that just explain to me what they're saying.
Like an Amazon X-ray, but for the slang that they use.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our review, but we've got some more segments to go on here. Mondo, give us your song of the day.
All right, I was going to pick a Black Sabbath song because of the Black Sabbath love in this movie and my favorite band of all time. I've done Black Sabbath before. And being that this is our Thanksgiving episode, I want to go with an indigenous black metal band. I've talked about some indigenous bands as of late and how much I enjoy this genre of American metal that's popping up. And the band I'm going to pick is butcher this name, so I'll spell it too. Nechachwin, Nechachwen. There's a fantastic band. They're on Bind Rune Recordings. You can find them on Spotify, on Apple Music. It's not like I do a lot of metal, and it is harsh. I'm not going to pretend like it's not aggressive, but it's very folk influenced too, with a lot of native elements in it, which makes it really just interesting music. They did an album last year called Kanawa Black, and it's fantastic. I called it one of the best albums of the whole year. So I'm in love with it, with this band. I saw him do an acoustic set at Fire in the Mountain Festival, and it was just great experience. So support some indigenous acts on Thanksgiving, because you know what, like it's not lost on me the origin of Thanksgiving. I just look at it as an excuse to have a day off work and hang out with good friends and family and eat and truly be thankful for what we have now, because all the people in the world don't always get the luxuries that we have. So it's cool to sometimes reflect on that and realize how good you actually have it, even though you might not think you do. So didn't mean to get deep on the song of the day, but metal band, Nechachwin. I'm gonna go with the album Kanawha Black, and we're just gonna go with the title track on that, because if you do look it up on YouTube, that's the first thing that pops up, and it's a fantastic track.
Awesome. Yeah, I just followed them on Spotify. I'm always looking for new music to listen to.
I'd have to look up the record name, but they did a record too that was recently just all acoustic, all folk, if you like folk music. And if you don't want the harshness, because they do still blend those elements. There's clean singing with the screechy vocals, and but they're just great musicians. And the front man, he's from West Virginia, and I forgot what tribe his ancestors are from, but that's kind of where he gets a lot of his stories from, and gets a lot of his, and he'll be the first one to say like all the songs aren't rooted in Native American mythology, but it's something though that he definitely shines through in the music.
Nice, that's so cool.
Then,
yeah, this sounds awesome.
Cool. All
right, Jody, you got some horror news for us.
Yeah, just a couple quick things. First off, a couple of trailers that have come out in the past week. The biggest one, and the one that's been talked about the most, Terrifier 3 has hit the internet. I think it's a great trailer. I think it does a great job of really setting this up with like this whole Christmas setting. And then the little girl comes down the stairs. She sees Santa. The reveal that it's actually Art, I mean, you kind of know it's coming, but it's actually pretty creepy. Something about his silent smile as he's just like laughing about it. I know people have freaked out because it implies a child was harmed, but it's horror. Like, it happens.
It's like Terrifier.
Yeah, it's Terrifier with the goal to shock. Like, if you kill a kid, right. Kill a kid. This is what it is.
I watched Evil Dead Rise the other night for the first time, and kids are getting turned into deadites all the time in that movie.
Oh, yeah. Killing kids in that.
It happens. It happens.
And, you know, and a lot of kids are shitty. Maybe they deserve to have Art the Clown come to their house.
It's a terrible little girl.
Yeah.
so that trailer came out. Also a trailer for a new movie called Imaginary that about a little girl and her imaginary friend who is represented by this little teddy bear. Teddy bear moves sometimes. It's implied that it's some kind of evil entity that has taken over the teddy bear. It looks pretty cool. I'm into it. I like anything that takes something that should be nice and happy and does kind of a creepy twist on it. And so the imaginary friend, yeah, I think it looks like a fun one.
Kind of like a demonic Ted.
A couple other things. We've got a movie called Founder's Day that will be coming out. We're continuing the holiday theme. I thought this was worth mentioning.
Seems with very Thanksgiving-esque, yeah.
Yeah, we get Founder's Day. I don't know much about it yet other than it's been rated R for strong bloody violence. It's supposedly a bold political slasher, so I don't know what that means, but
I thought you were going to say it was like a Purge spinoff or something.
Yeah, no, it that definitely could have been name, with that yeah. name. Yeah. It says a mischief-laden, blood-soaked mystery with a whodunit element. So, yeah, you get the whodunit mystery that you like.
Great. Yep, love it.
We also have received word that People Under the Stairs is going to be remade by Universal and Jordan Peele's Monkey Paw. Which is, I think, the perfect studio to remake People Under the Stairs.
That first movie was terrifying when I saw it.
I love the first movie, and people are complaining about the remake. But like you said, what better people to remake it? It's going to be. I think it's going to be good. Yeah, I mean, I'll watch anything Jordan Peele's company does, but I have faith, considering everything they've done of it has been great so far.
And then, lastly, this is just something I'm personally into because I have little figures all over my office. Ooh. A couple of figures have been announced. NECA, of course, is going in full force with Thanksgiving. They have a Ultimate John Carver. They have a clothes like with the cloth John Carver. They have a Toonie Terrors version of John Carver. They have a stuffed version, and they have a stuffed version of the turkey that you can pull the head off of because it's Velcroed on. And I think I'm going to have to order at least a few of those things.
Oh, and, is it like the mascot in the parade?
Yeah. Yeah, the turkey, but like the head completely is removable and it just reattaches with Velcro. And I'm very tempted by that one.
Jordy, did you see the Alex Murphy one that came out?
That was the other one I was going to say. The RoboCop Alex Murphy figure. It's specifically him getting shot in all of that like splattery glory of RoboCop. And so like, he's got a removable hand that has got blood splatter coming out. There's so a gnarly shirt that's just full of holes. It's one of the most, probably one of the bloodiest characters I've ever seen in an action figure. So if you like them messy, that's a great action figure to get. And one I will probably be getting too. So yeah, lots of good stuff coming up.
All right, we're going to take a quick dip into our Patreon pit. First, we got to welcome our latest patron, Ashton. Welcome, Ashton. Thank you for joining.
Thank you.
And then our weekly poll that we can all answer, but we'll get to our Patreon answers first, is what horror movie are you thankful for this year? So what movie came out this year that you're the most thankful for? And while you guys ponder that, I'll read off some of the responses. Ashton said, if we consider Beau's Afraid a horror movie, then that's it. If not, Infinity Pool. Someone else said, No One Will Save You, which is a fantastic movie from Hulu. Whitney said, I'm thankful for When Evil Lurks. Foreign horror goes hard, and I'm all here for it. Our friend Tommy says, Megan, if you can believe that came out this year. That feels like it was
it's been a long time.
And then our friend from Australia, Andrew, says Evil Dead Rise.
Nice. All good picks.
Mondo Jody, what do you...
Well, I'm going to say When Evil Lurks is my number two movie of the year right now. My number one is Suitable Flesh.
Yeah. Oh, I love Suitable Flesh. Good.
God, I love that movie so much.
Yeah.
Like, I watched it once. I can't wait to watch it again. So my favorite... like. That movie is so, like, for being a horror movie, it's so ridiculously horny and like so over the top, and that's just my shit. So I loved that movie, and Barbara Crampton is phenomenal in that. I love whenever Crampton pops up on screen, I'm usually happy. So that's what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for the fact though that like it was made kind of independently and yet it's getting a lot of good buzz, and that's all. And Heather Graham too was awesome in that, not to take away from her at all. Pretty much everyone in that movie was great.
Judah Lewis, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care for the Babysitter movies, but I thought he was fine in them. But this was a role that he got to tear into.
I mean, he plays multiple personality characters basically and goes seamlessly in between those. And it was impressive.
Yeah.
Jody, did you go already?
I haven't yet. No, my favorites of the year in horror so far, Suitable Flesh is up there. Evil Dead Rise that I just recently watched. I thought it was fantastic. And this one, Thanksgiving. I love it. It's going to be one of my best of the year for sure.
It's probably my number three.
Yeah. I haven't seen When Evil Lurks yet or Where Evil Lurks yet.
You're going to like it. You're going to like it.
It's on my list.
Yeah.
I watch it at 9 a.m. on a Monday. I wouldn't recommend that though. Cause like the rest of my day, I'm just staring at a wall.
No, those are all fantastic ones. I keep going back to Satanic Hispanics because, like, a movie that made me laugh and scared, like, that much. Like, it's an anthology, so, like, you get a bit of everything. Like, it was really fulfilling in all those aspects. And
it just came out on VOD, too.
Yep.
No one has an excuse not to go watch that. But, it's probably the biggest I've laughed and some of the scariest I've been watching a movie this year, all wrapped in one. And, a lot of great, promising directors. The same guy who did When Evil Lurks did, like, the scariest segment.
The one that did she did the earthquake segment in VHS 85. I forgot what she does in Satanic Hispanics, but it's also great.
Yeah.
Like, even the ones I didn't love are just culturally I didn't understand. I still was really, like, into, like, on the visual level. So I just highly recommend that. And, you know, it's a movie that may not have been made specifically for some of my background, but to see that background was very cool to me. That's what I'm going with. James and Chelsea, do you have a movie that you're thankful for this year?
I'll say one that hasn't been mentioned yet. I'm very thankful for Saw X. I loved Saw X so much because I love Saw in general. I love the campiness of Saw, the convoluted storytelling of Saw. And this felt like such a return to form that it just, I have not felt this optimistic about the Saw franchise in so long. It just makes me feel they've still got the sauce. We can maybe still get a few more twists and turns out of that story, even though it's they really wrote themselves to a corner. But so much fun.
I think it was a screenwriter for the earlier movie said something like, "What would you have done differently?" He was, "I wouldn't have killed off. I would not have killed off Jigsaw.
I could do it all at least a man to kill them both." Yeah. Oh my god, nowhere to go. Yeah, here's Hoffman.
Saw 10 was a nice surprise this year, and I was very happy.
So it's
All right, James.
You know, it's been almost a year since it came out, and there have been so many great movies that have come out since then. But my heart is still with Megan, the little PG-13 movie that it's just the tone of it. It's exactly what I want and love. Akiva Cooper Akela Cooper, I'm sorry. And the director whose name I can't think of offhand. They just completely nailed that tone. I absolutely loved it. Could it have been bloodier? I guess, whatever. I don't care. I laughed my ass off at it. I saw it originally in a small screening with just like critics early on, and I was the only one laughing my ass off throughout it, and nobody else could get it. And I came home and I was like, Chelsea, you need to see this. And then we saw it with like a screening of like
private screening with Dead Meat fans,
and it was like,
oh my god, it was such a hit.
Yeah. I just love Megan. I can't wait for the second one. I'm glad that they're taking their time and that it's not being rushed out in just a few months, that they're doing a whole nother year. So so many other movies that are maybe better in some measurements, but like my heart still lies with Megan. I just love her.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That was a good one.
It's been a good year for horror.
It has. Last year was one of the best years for horror ever. Yeah. And this year, you know, I didn't think it was as strong, but I'm looking through this list and I'm like, no, man, there's a lot of really good stuff here.
Yeah, no, I've been working on my list, and anytime I can easily fill my list with at least 10, and then I have like five more that, like, you know, I could make my top 10 that I'm like debating over. I'm okay with that. But yeah, last year was a banner year, but this is by no means a bad year, which I've heard some people say. I think they're just being a little
That's ridiculous.
No, then they're not watching enough, or like maybe they just hate Skinamarink so much that it shrouded.
Skinamarink this year.
That was this year, man. And like, we loved it. I know it's very divisive. I get it if you don't like it. I totally understand. But I
never
also
watched.
I never watched
that on my list just for the audacity of making that movie.
Well, I feel like I have to wait a few years to watch it because all the discourse is still so fresh in my brain. I want to go in there with a clean palette with no preconceived notions and just see what I think of it.
Yeah, cool. And then there's The Blackening, which was really funny.
I love The Blackening.
They just announced today that they're writing a sequel for Blackening.
Yeah. I saw that.
Oh, great.
That was
cool.
Just announced. I didn't know
just lots of things. I real early on in the year, I watched Unwelcome, and that movie has just stuck with me. Yeah. I still need to watch that, Chelsea, because like that was with the little guys at the end. it's like the couple who inherit the house because they keep facing trouble in the city. It's like Irish, I think. Is it Irish or British?
Yeah, I mean, so I need to go back and watch that then.
It's on Shudder. It's a fun one.
It's a fun one, man. There's a lot of fun horror out there this year.
All right.
That's some great puppetry in that movie.
All right. Yeah. And then our last segment that we always do is our, you know, dad advice, dads from the crypt. But I thought we'd do a little bit of a twist on this. We're going to match it up with the Scream Dreams. So we're going to go and talk about our biggest Thanksgiving nightmare and then give our dad advice on how we would resolve. So I'll go first to kind of explain. So, like, my biggest nightmare, I'm always in charge of the turkey, which is, you know, the biggest deal. Mm-hmm. But it also is, like, the most complicated thing to make. So my wife is always asking, what time are we going to eat? I need to have everyone here at the same time, that the kids ready, we have to have all the sides and everything. So I say, I do my math and say, okay, it'd take 4 hours of cooking or whatever it is. And that math never works out right. So I'm always sitting there with my wife just, like, giving me a look, like, okay, should be ready anytime soon. So my dad advice on that quote nightmare scenario is give yourself a little buffer. Turkey's not going to run off anywhere. Make sure you take care of it. You're checking it so it doesn't overcook, but then give yourself some extra time. It's going to be okay if it's not fresh out of the oven.
Yeah, I'm the turkey maker around here as well. And I always do it wrong as far as estimating the time as well. But my nightmare scenario, I've got a relative, not to be named, but who tends to bring up things and start drama at the family get-togethers. I remember one year after Christmas, just unloaded on everybody in the family. And so my dad advice for how to deal with that is, I don't know, liquor that relative up, maybe might be helpful. But if that won't work, just be a little subtle with your plans and maybe you can just skirt around them completely and not have them come. It's okay to not invite somebody.
I was going to say challenge him to a grappling match in the backyard and choke him unconscious. Sure. That's what I would do.
All right, Mondo.
In the beauty of Thanksgiving for us now is that we generally go to friends' house every year and because they love to cook and we just sit down and eat and it's a beautiful thing. But I have terrible social anxiety and my wife's family are like the best people in the world. And I'm not just saying that because they may or may not listen to this podcast. I don't know if they do, but they are like the best people in the world. They're all good fucking people that would give you the shirt at their back if they could. But they're very loud and I'm not that person. Like when I get in those situations, it just overwhelms me because I have a low social battery. So my dad advice is pop a fucking edible and then go deal with this kind of stuff. And you'll be so much more personable. But also, like, I know it's a lot because especially for like people with multiple mother-in-laws, father-in-laws and kids, sometimes you do have to do the whole thing where you bounce from house to house to house. Mm-hmm. And that can be stressful. But my advice would be in that case, walk in with a smile. Don't let them know you've had a long day because they just want to see your face. And sometimes you don't want to bring that mood down or make someone feel bad for you coming over there. So just do your best. Do your best on Thanksgiving. Have a good time. Don't stress the small stuff. Like, is shit going to go wrong? Jason, are your mashed potatoes going to be lumpy? Probably. But everyone still love them. I don't know. I like lumpy mashed potatoes, so that's me.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
Oh, I don't know. What's your... For Thanksgiving every year, we have Thanksgiving at our house, but our housemate cooks because this is like his day.
I was going to ask.
Like Halloween is ours, Thanksgiving is his.
It is like I am afraid to even go near the kitchen on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, your fear is the kitchen on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, what does Gressel make?
I need to know.
Yeah, what's that?
What does Gressel make? I need to know.
Everything.
Yeah, I mean, it changes every year. It's not just like standard Thanksgiving food. It'll be like different takes on Thanksgiving food, and it gets like, yeah, it's wild. But I also feel bad if I don't contribute anything to Thanksgiving when like other people are bringing food and he is going insane in the kitchen making stuff. So I don't know. Look up like no bake recipes or like one year I did an elaborate jello mold that I could do in a corner that was not obtrusive. This year I think I'm gonna make buttered beer.
We gotta get those ingredients, baby.
I know, but it's not butter beer like Harry Potter. This is like a recipe from the 1500s and we tested it other night and it's very interesting and I think I want to make that again.
Okay.
Yeah. We have the ingredient. Gressel got us the ale.
Oh, we did get the ale again? Okay. I was thinking we should do the universal one because it's sweeter.
Yeah, I know. I just have to look up a recipe.
Yeah. Because we did. Yeah, we made this buttered beer and it's very like.
It's a recipe from the 1500s.
It tastes not, like a recipe from the 1500s.
It's like Universal Studios.
No, it's like a spiced
beer.
Mold cup. Beer. And it's like, okay. I did a cup and that was like, all right, I'm pretty good.
Every time we go to Universal, we each get like our own like frosted butter beer, and no one can finish it. It's just too much.
No, the frosted one is too sweet. You gotta get the hot one.
The hot one, put some rum in it.
You get a shot of the white rum. You put it in there. It is the best
protein. Okay.
That's what I want us to have on this Holy Thanksgiving Day. It's just the equivalent to that because we're just walking around Horror Nights, sipping that thing. Feeling at the top of life. It was amazing.
Okay.
I guess my fear is, even though it is our housemate who is doing the cooking, we always host the Thanksgiving thing. It's our Friendsgiving. It's like our eighth or ninth year in a row doing this. And I guess that's my fear is like people not showing up, people being like, oh, you know what? That was fun for those years, but we're going to go elsewhere this year. And just like everyone not doing that. And then it's like, oh, fuck, do people not like us anymore?
I'm afraid people aren't going to want to play poker after.
Ooh, yeah, we play poker every year. Love that. Nice. That's always fun.
Yeah. But that's a commitment to sit and play poker all night.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that wraps up another episode. James and Chelsea, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Where can people follow you?
Dead Meat on YouTube, where you can find the flagship series, The Kill Count, and the Dead Meat podcast, which is the video version is on YouTube. And
if you just want to listen to it, that's wherever you get your podcasts.
Yep.
Yeah. And Scream Jeans, where can they find that?
That is same thing. It has a YouTube channel, Scream Dreams podcast you can look up. And then if you are content with just the audio, anywhere you want, Spotify, Apple, all the stuff.
Excellent. All right. Well, next week we'll be covering the third to last episode of Tales from the Crypt, Confession. We appreciate everyone for listening. We would really appreciate if you give us a rating, review on iTunes, a rating on Spotify, and check out our YouTube channel for videos of these podcasts. And with that, we thank you for listening to Dads from the Crypt.
Adios.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Turkey Day.
Follow Dads from the Crypt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or I will follow you to the grave. No, seriously, you really should watch, but be careful what you axe for. You may get it. Ha 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 ha.